Okay, I'd like to invite the speakers up to the table, please. First of all, we can open this up for discussion, and if anybody has any questions to any of the speakers, please feel free. I think there's a microphone over there. We can get started. Perhaps I could start then. We've seen three examples of really important work, both from a scientific and social aspect, addressing global diseases. But one of the things that's always concerned me, and we heard it a little bit from Dr. Kirsch's talk as well, is once we go into these areas and we do this research and we identify these ways of implementing solutions, one of my concerns is that when we're finished our studies and we leave these areas, there's no sustainability. Things tend not to be sustainable. And I think this is something that has to have more emphasis on in the future, is the issue of sustainability. So, I don't know, maybe Roger, would you? You've probably had to deal with this before.
Yes, it's a very important question, and I guess with most health problems, they recur. I think it's really important to, when we get involved with health issues that affect developing countries, that we do take seriously the issue of developing and working with developing local capacity, because very often what happens is that the donors and organizations, WHO and so forth, will go in and try and make a difference, but it has to be passed on at some stage to the national health programs. And so I think always we need to keep in mind that is likely to become an important step in the process, and we have to build for it. And have the tools, think through the tools that are going to help that sustainability to be more feasible. So I'll stop there.
I already said before this, I think this is the most challenging issue. After all these years of working with different peoples in different countries, we have developed trust relationships, and I could make a list of people that would be willing to continue to collaborate on these projects, but we don't have any financial support, continuous financial support. So we are fighting for a little bit of money here and there so we can continue supporting some exchange activities, some students going back and forth, some little project being done here and there. But we lack the financial support, with continuous financial support. So we just kind of survive, but we cannot guarantee sustainability.
I have very little to add to that. I think that we should be more realistic in what do we expect to be sustained. If we want to sustain simply the relationships, is one way to go. And if we want to sustain the program and the program outcomes, this is a completely different issue. And we should distinguish clearly in between the two. We're working in global health for the very long term, and there is no funding agency on earth, except perhaps for Bill Gates, that will give money forever to a good cause. They all have project cycles. Those project cycles are usually 4 or 5 years at most. I think the new Global Health Research Initiative, which has combine the resources of four major Canadian agencies such as Health Canada, CIHR, CEDA, and IDRC under the umbrella of the Tisdale-Corti team grant is a good start. It is a good start for sustainability because that the creation of this fund, and by the way, I think we should recognize that in global health, never in the recent history we have had so much financial resources to work with that in the last 5 years. I think this has to be acknowledged. So now it's up to us to present more innovative programs, more innovative solutions, to look at sustainability not only of the relationships but also and above all of the program outcomes over time, which tend to diminish and tend to be lower every year after the funding disappears. This is a natural cycle. I see it as a natural death and not something that we should be very, very concerned about. What we should be concerned is, yes, to build a new paradigm for global health in Canada, because there are many paradigms for global health out there. To build also with this new paradigm a very important ethical framework within which our programs should be developed and framed. This is lacking. And I think there are some efforts in part of CIHR with the recent guidelines for ethical conducting ethical research or conducting research within certain ethical paradigm for indigenous populations in Canada that we are advocating as a very useful tool to look at research in poor resource countries. Research in poor resource countries, which is the research that we have all been presenting this morning, is the main issue at stake. We are working with low resource countries. We cannot expect sustainability coming from funding from those countries unless the social conditions and the economic global crisis will recede, which doesn't seem to be the case. So we're here for a long haul, not for a short haul. Thank you.
Yes.
So I just want to follow up on that. So Dr. Kirsch raised this, and Maria, I think, specifically talked about it in terms of research to action. How do we actually move from a paper to a program such as what Roger was talking about that is now based in a community when political paradigms change or funding priorities change? And how do you think about those issues as you're developing your programs and what's going to be left behind in the communities or with your colleagues?
The example with ivermectin distribution for onchocerciasis has been really interesting because the distribution now is done just by somebody in the community who's not medical person, but they are given some basic training to distribute the drugs, keep records, and encourage people to participate. It's involved country presidents, health ministers, the medical community, regional leaders, health centers. In the regions, sort of getting behind this and educating. I mean, it goes with a certain level of education to make people aware of the benefits of participating and feeling positive about it. So it's been very successful, but I think it's also raised the level of awareness of some of these health problems in the communities, and that sometimes things can be done just because you've implanted that involvement in at the local level. I think that's really quite important.
Another question here.
It's a trend common to disease, that is that while these things work and then one succeeds, you have a problem of limited efficacy. And my question is about in general, as you speak, how can we work to improve the efficacy? A more specific reflection of for example, we have talked about two problems that explain part of autonomy, lack of a non-complete effectiveness of the treatment. One is brain infection, the other one is drug resistance. And we have a simple model of drug resistance in pigs.
Maybe the people answering the question can just briefly restate the question and then give the answer. Maybe Roger.
Well, if you want to continue, okay. Or?
I'm asking questions about for the infectious diseases. If we are not perhaps also, if we should also think about fight against the parasites and also strengthening the immunocompetence of the people who get sick. And for the PTDS, I was wondering if, again, there isn't a strategy to help people becoming more resistant to PTDS rather than intervening when they already have PTDS.
Thank you. I'll start off seeing you address some of your questions to me. It's an important consideration as the question of we can intervene and then get some benefit in terms of morbidity, but then it reoccurs, so we have reinfections, for example, with infectious diseases. There is very much an interplay with immunity and nutrition, which has a big impact on the immune status of people, and also the fact that with many of these infectious diseases, we're moving away with these mass drug administration programs from treatment of individuals to treatment of communities and populations. And basically we're trying to reduce the prevalence of the infectious stages in the population, reduce transmission, and then to have a long-term effect on the prevalence in the human population and through that on morbidity. So we do have to keep in mind the interrelationship of susceptibility to infection and nutrition development status and poverty, of course, and how successful the interventions will be. Drug resistance, I think there's been far... The tendency is that we don't worry about drug resistance until we've got a flagrant problem, and so... And by that stage, of course, the drugs that were being used are no longer useful, and we have a crisis. We need to be monitoring this, And it improves, again, the overall impact of the interventions by having some measurement of quantitative measurement on the what the outcomes are if we do some monitoring. Unfortunately, too many of these major programs are being launched and carried out without the only measure sometimes is how many pills have been administered and not what the outcome is. Is it really doing something? There's some measurement, you know, on the outcomes, but it's not sufficient. And I think this is short-sighted. It does cost money to do monitoring, but it's really important for being able to keep on top of the situation and to sell the message that this is an intervention that's really having an impact. And if you just do the intervention and you don't know the extent of the impact, then you don't have very good grounds for going forward and keeping governments and funding bodies and the communities involved in participating.
Yeah, the question of how PTSD could be managed with drugs and pharmaceuticals speaks to the need to review or revise maybe the model of humanitarian interventions that has been prevailing this far. This model has been, and it continues to be, much based on the natural disaster model. And we are here confronted with different kind of violences that are not natural, or they're intentional rather than non-intentional in nature. And this is, I think, a major distinction that has and needs to be made. The natural disaster model has been relatively narrow to the provision of food, shelter, water, and emergency medical care. And we should not continue with the medicalization of human suffering, but rather try to work with the community endogenous resources, resilience of individuals and communities, the social tissue of the community that has been deeply affected, and above all with the psychological and psychosocial dimensions of the problems that continue to be neglected in much of the so-called humanitarian interventions. We need to be very critical to what has been going on in this field, and I think research and capacity building with our partners in the countries that we are now involved is showing us once again, and more than anything else, confirming once again the need for more research in this field, which has been also neglected or taken for granted. The need for more research and more, our ability in increased knowledge transfer and go for a capacity building exercise jointly with our partners, it remains the most important challenge to be completed. And it's the only way, it seems to me, that we can then look at most effective interventions, both in the pharmacological sense, but also on the psychosocial sense.
I'm afraid that due to time, we're going to have to end this session here. If anybody has any additional questions, you can talk to them over the coffee break. So I'd like everybody to join me in thanking our speakers for a very interesting session. So we'll be back in 10 minutes, Tim.